The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
Hello. My name is Laura Schaefer. I'm with the Open Voting Consortium. So how many people here actually think it's a good idea to vote on a paperless electronic voting machine? Don't be shy. Raise your hand if you do. Okay. So let me summarize what I see are the four main problems with paperless electronic voting machines and why we don't think it's a good idea. First of all, there's no paper record. Secondly, it uses proprietary software where not even election officials or independent testers can see how these machines are programmed. Thirdly, they're expensive. And fourth, they're produced by corporations who have revolving door relationships with politicians and election officials. No paper record means we cannot recount or audit our votes. There's nothing to stop someone from changing our vote totals without our knowledge. Proprietary software means we cannot see how these machines are programmed and that somebody could program in a back door so that they could change the election totals, like Bev Harris showed Howard Dean on national TV, as many of you saw in Votergate. Expensive means that each county has to spend the HAVA money, the Help America Vote Act money, on these machines instead of spending it on educating poll workers and voters. Corporately owned and controlled means that revolving door relationships between politicians and election officials can form between the companies, where Bill Jones, of the past Secretary of State of California, can take a job with Sequoia at $10,000 a month after serving his term, where Sequoia can sponsor dinner crews for election officials, and where the president of Diebold can promise that the votes counted at his machines will be delivered to George W. Bush and mean it. So now, a lot of you may be asking, why should we use machines at all? Let me tell you, if you use a computer to make your selections and then print your paper ballot, and that ballot is counted with a transparent, open-source machine, there are several advantages, including security and staying within the realm of being what's realistic to get passed. First of all, the advantages is that it makes voter intent very clear. When you vote on a computer and print how you voted, there are no hanging chads, there are no partially erased optical scan marks. We know how people voted because it's printed out clearly for every single person. It is easier to translate a ballot into another language when you vote on a computer. And the blind and reading impaired can vote without assistance. They can have a secret ballot like everybody else. And the blind lobby is very strong in this debate. There is also a HAVA requirement that Barbara mentioned that says that at least one machine in every precinct has to be available for blind people to vote without assistance. Also, machines are easier to count instant runoff voting or approval voting when you use a machine. If we use machines responsibly, they offer a sense of security. We have a long, long tradition of election rigging and ballot box stuffing in this country, and that began way before computers were invented. When you take away machines, you increase the number of threats we have to rely, because we have to rely on humans, many, many humans, to count our votes. There have been many cases of human error and fraud used with just hand-counting systems. Many of you may be aware of the case in San Francisco where a box of ballots was found in the San Francisco Bay. And as Andy Stevenson mentioned, yes, they were found, but I doubt they were counted, given their probably waterlogged nature. There's also been cases of fraud found in the Ohio recounts, where optical scan ballots were found with stickers over the carry circle and filled in for Bush, where punch cards were found pre-punched. In West Virginia, they have actually made a law saying that they cannot count the votes at the precinct because there were so many cases of fraud and human error. We need an electronic backup of the votes in case something happens to these paper ballots. Also, it's not entirely realistic to ask for just paper only and hand count. I appreciate everyone's energy, and this could be a possibility, but let me tell you what the situation has been in our experience in the last couple years. Anyone who has spoken with a county registrar knows that it is hard enough to convince them we need to keep paper ballots as part of the system. County registrars usually choose the system for their county, and they have influence over the Secretary of State or State Assembly members who decide which systems we can choose from. Convincing them to hand count counties with 40 contests or more on the ballot is unrealistic. Also, separating the ballots, so one possible solution that we've and other people have thought of is, what if we separated the ballot so that we hand counted for the federal elections? Well, we worked with Ellen Tyson of Voters Unite, calling senators and congresspeople, asking them if this was a possibility, and we got nowhere. No one, not even Barbara Boxer or Shirley Tubbs Jones, thought it was realistic and feasible, and no one was willing to support it. So now you might be wondering, if I don't advocate for a paperless electronic voting machines, and I don't advocate for a paper-only hand-counted system, what system do we think would be the most transparent to voters and accurate and secure? Well, I've been working with the Open Voting Consortium. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to the development, maintenance, and delivery of open voting systems for use in public elections. We are nonpartisan. We are comprised of computer scientists, voting experts, and voting rights activists. We have a growing membership base, and though our headquarters is in Northern California, we have open voting meetup groups around the country. The system we have created and demonstrated to public acclaim is an open voting system. It's where you vote on a computer, and then you print a summary paper ballot of how you voted. These summary paper ballots can be hand counted if this is what is people want, because we're all about what people want, by looking at the names that's printed of how they voted. They can also be scanning this barcode. And of course, all machines used in the process of voting on the computer and counting them with the scanner would be open source. And there'd also be an audit. There'd also, of course, be an automatic audit for states like California who have a 1% automatic audit, where these would be hand counted. And the important thing is these can be easily hand counted. So this system is chock full, as many voting rights activists and experts have noted, it's chock full of safeguards. First of all, there are three ways which the vote is counted and stored. When you vote on the computer, it creates an electronic ballot image of how you voted. Then it prints this paper ballot summary of how you voted. These are then scanned, and that rescanned image is compared with what's on the computer. So you have three different ways of making sure that your vote is counted. And the scan, by the way, you can also, if you don't think that this information is what's written here, you can check it with headphones. So also, we have created open standards for running elections, such as a chain of custody, where we know who does what. As many of you may or may not know, in Diebold systems, when the administrators log on, the logon is admin and the password is global for every single person who is running the election. Now, in that system, you're not going to know who's doing what. There's no chain of custody, no responsibility for who's counting our votes. In our system, it would absolutely not be like that. Also, our system is open source and it uses public software that would be free. This means that anyone and everyone can look at the source code, can get a copy of the software, and try to run a voting machine at home. They can do whatever they want with the software. They can give us lots of feedback. We want lots of feedback from as many experts as possible. And then once it is completely finished for whatever county we're designing it for, it would be certified, and that would stand as the official version, which would have a holographic seal on it. Also, our system would be publicly owned. And this is what I think is the most important thing. Again, we are a nonpartisan, nonprofit group. We would not give election officials cushy jobs after they finish their terms. We would not take people on cruises. We are completely, we can't even go on cruises ourselves right now. We are completely committed to having integritous elections in this country. And we want as many people to work with us as possible from every political party, from all walks of life. So now you might be thinking, what are we doing to get the system in? We have five main things that we're working on, and we would really love your help as much as possible. We are doing software development, where we're creating open source central tabulation machines for Oregon. And if you're from Oregon, please come talk to me, because we'd love to get your support in pressuring the government to accept these. We are also going after HAVA funds in several states, especially California. The way it works is you apply through a university, a public university, and the HAVA money would be given to that university for research and development of voting systems. There has never been a study done, publicly funded study done, about what would be the best system for any given state. This would be a scientific study given to that university to look into open source voting machines for their state. Also, we work on legislation. We helped pass SB 1438 in California, which requires the voter verified paper trail. But again, legislation, it's not the strongest legislation, because as we all know, if that paper trail does not count as the vote and there is not randomly selected precincts for the audit, then they could still count the vote one way on the computer and print it another way. So we need to work on stronger legislation, and we can offer expert computer advice for people who are doing that. We also are trying to create an election rules database, where we would create a database of what the rules are for elections in every county and compare that to what voters say is actually happening when they vote. And we're working with some scientists at MIT on this, and we would like help with this as well. Also, we're doing public education by coming to events such as this. We organize our own events. I've created a guide on how to organize events. I have access to almost every single election reform movie that's out there, Electoral Dysfunction, Votergate, Linda Burkett's movie. So if you want copies of that, you can come see me. I'm also going to put some sign-up sheets that I forgot to put out for the people that made those movies so that you can order them from them. Also, this summer, I'd like to take clips from those movies and go speak in different communities. So if you are interested in having me come and talk to a political group or your organization, that would be great. Also, we have meetup groups that meet around the country. Many of them have just gotten started. But if you go to meetup.com and you look under election reform for your community, you might see an open voting meetup group. So please join, and with that group, you too can do education of your community, you can help us with the database, you can work on legislation and pressuring your officials. So finally, I'd just like to say that we are a member-supported organization. We are like the public radio or the free press of voting systems development. And if the public does not invest in their voting systems, then the public can't really own it. So please, please, please donate or become a member and you know, educate your communities about what we're trying to do. Thanks. Oh. One more thing I forgot to mention. I have blue sign-up sheets that I'm going to pass around, and they're also in the back. So please sign up so we can stay connected to you. So again, if I come to Columbus, Ohio or something, I could come talk to your group, or you know, we can stay connected to each other and work together on this. Also, if you're a part of some organization and you would like to talk with me further about the system and give us your endorsement, again, we want as many people involved as possible. So please sign up. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Teresa Hummel from where'sthepaper.org. What you see on the screen is the fraudulent voting machine known as Fraudo. It starts off It's on the website, whereisthepaper.org. It starts off, choose one, real election or machine test. And the reason it starts this way is that some vendors use different software for their machine testing as opposed to their real elections, in which case we ask, what are you testing for? Anyway, my machine works very much like others, which is during the machine test, you get honest vote counts, but during the real election, you get fraud. So, I don't know if I can see the mouse. Oh, here it is. Okay, so I'm selecting a real election. Click here to start voting. This is where the voter goes into the booth. There's only one race for president. I want you to know that this machine has all the required federal functionality and all required federal security features. It does. This is a certifiable system. Anyway, I'm going to keep this short because I have other things to say, and you're welcome to go on the internet and run as many voters as you want through it. There is no limit whatsoever to the number of voters other than the size of your RAM. All right, so I'm voting for John Doe, and I come down to verify my ballot. And if you have a voter-verified paper trail, this is what would be printed for president. Your vote is John Doe. I say correct. And to keep this very short, I'm going to end the election. Down at the bottom of the screen, it says the poll worker may close the booth. I'm closing the booth, and there's my total. Now, if you are an election director, you are 100% within your rights to say that we had a perfect election. We had one voter. We have one ballot. I see no problems. Whoa. I guess there's the screen is too small or something. Anyway, what you're seeing here are the printout at the end of the day of the ballots from machine memory. And the left one is correct. The right one is falsified. And the purpose of showing this is to show that they look equally authentic. Whatever you print at the end of the day, who knows if it's accurate or not. That's why we need a ballot approved by the voter. The little thing down at the bottom is supposed to be on the right next to the falsified ballots. Anyway, it's an audit trail, and it's also falsified. So please go to whereisthepaper.org and enjoy running your elections. And you can put this on a laptop and take it with you and show it to legislators or people you're trying to influence to explain to them that electronic voting has this problem, which is that you can't see the recording of ballots and the counting of ballots. And that's why we oppose electronic voting, because it takes the election out of public observation. Okay, now to start my regular remarks. Thank you to Bernard Ellis and all the hardworking people, patriots, who put together this National Election Reform Conference. I'm going to take an overview broader than election reform. We need democracy reform. A vital democracy requires an informed, engaged citizenry. Today, the United States of America fails that test. Regarding misinformed citizens who then become misinformed voters, I'm going to give you three examples. First, a large percentage of Americans still believe that Osama bin Laden is the same man as Saddam Hussein. We're talking about half of the people in this country. A large percentage of Americans believe that Iraqi weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq. Many respected and powerful people who have goodwill and are public servants dedicated to democracy still do not understand why an ATM is relatively secure, but an electronic voting machine that looks like an ATM is not secure. No one has sat down with them and explained the concept of auditing, that ATMs are audited, and DREs, touchscreens, are not. A lot of people who work for election reform and against electronic voting think that the problem with electronic voting is secret software. That's not the problem. The problem is secret vote recording and secret vote counting. And that can be a problem with any technology. I started by saying that democracy requires an informed, engaged citizenry. Well, we're informed and we're engaged. And so I'd like to talk about how we can spread it. One is to become a role model. When I speak, and I have longer than 15 minutes, I start with my story of how I innocently walked into a meeting where some guy was saying, but I trust the computer, I don't want to verify my ballot. And I just about, you know, had a heart attack. And, you know, stood up in the middle of the audience and started, you know, like the Jack in the Box, wait a minute, you know, and finally after about 5 minutes, some lady yanked on my shirt and said, sit down. But I haven't sat down yet. So I think becoming a role model and letting people know what it feels like and how good it feels to work for democracy and to work for a good cause is very important. It's also important to ask people to come with you when you take action, when you testify at hearings, when you meet with the editorial board of your local newspaper, when you go lobbying, when you meet with election officials in your county, when you work with your county legislature to try to get a resolution passed and that sort of thing. To bring as many people with you as possible so they begin to see the process and feel comfortable with it and can later carry the ball by themselves or with other groups. It's also important to speak, even if you're uncomfortable with speaking or to find someone who is comfortable speaking, at schools, colleges, churches, every organization where you can get an audience, to friends, family, your hairdresser, you know what I mean, everybody. And third of all, to engage every organization that you're a member of or someone that an organization that you know someone who's a member of. I, up until I got involved with this issue, was a member of 26 different organizations to whom I sent hundreds of dollars annually. That was also when I was working. My work is offshore. The last really good offer for work I got was in Baghdad. I declined. But anyway, my question is, what happened with the American Civil Liberties Union? What happened with NOW? What happened with the League of Women Voters? What happened with environmental? What happened with environmental organizations? What happened with unions? What happened with the Democratic Party? What happened? The Lions, the Elks, the Masons. Every organization has an interest in democracy, and it's up to us to inform them because how else are they going to get the information? I would like to talk about Common Cause, which up until March of 2004 opposed the voter-verified paper ballot because they felt that voters with disabilities would not be able to verify their ballot. How the organization changed was through member pressure. And so you have to be an insider, you have to express your opinion, and you have to make yourself heard in order to bring these organizations on board. I attended, as a member of the League of Women Voters, I attended their national conference last summer, June 2004, and helped write their new position, the so-called SARA test, secure, accurate, recountable, accessible. And the league position allows any state and local league to take whatever position they choose for their locality. If you have a problem with that or your league doesn't know that, you can send me an email and I will send you back the email from Helen Palmer, president of the League of Women Voters of Minnesota, who worked on that and introduced the resolution, which then passed in their national meeting. Some other things that we can do to inform and engage people is to run publicity events. I have yet to do the thing that I am dreaming of, which is a paper ballot vote counting contest. If you go to my website, there is a short paper that I wrote after interviewing Canadian scrutineers as to how they actually count ballots. And I have three different methods that they described to me. And I would love to get some fourth graders because I was told that the Canadian hand counting methods and the entire election procedure in Canada is geared to the fourth grade level so that ordinary people who are not, you know, PhDs in statistics or whatever, can run an honest and verified election, all right? So I wrote that up, it's on my website. But anyway, I'd love to see, you know, teams of fourth graders counting ballots, and if you talk about getting media attention, that'll get it for you. I'd like to see essay contests, grade school on up, and here are some suggested topics. How would a person's life be different if they lived under tyranny as opposed to democracy? What are a citizen's rights and responsibilities? Are they exactly parallel? How is media reporting affecting people's attitudes towards current events? What does government of the people, by the people, and for the people actually mean? Does our government represent everyone equally? Does everyone benefit equally from our so-called democracy? One of the other things I'd like to suggest is that we stop talking about voters' rights and start talking about citizens' rights and responsibilities, because in fact they are exactly parallel. We have the right to vote, and it's also our responsibility. We have the right and the responsibility to be informed on from a variety of sources on current events and to understand how the government works. I speak to a lot of young people these days who don't know that the government has three branches, that most legislatures have two houses, and what is the difference between a law and a regulation, an elected official versus an appointed official, and so on. And they hesitate to engage in the political process because they don't really understand what it is. And that's because we stopped teaching civics in the schools going back 20, 25 years. And that is a major problem, and we need to educate each other. I'm reminded of Emma Goldman, a biography that I read where back in the 1920s, after she worked a 12-hour day in a factory, she went to a union-run school where they taught the union members and factory workers how to read and write and how to understand economics and politics because they wanted them to be able to unionize. We need to do something like that again because our kids aren't learning what they need to know in school. We need to participate in government activities. We need to attend hearings, testify at hearings, lobby, ask questions, observe legislative procedures, meet with elected officials, ask questions, get answers, and then go back and say, why did you lie to me the last time, and so on. We need to change the values in this country because we value sports, fashion, and gossip ahead of participation, clear thinking, and passionate commitment and activism. We need to praise people who live that type of life that contributes to our community. We need to criticize media bias and stupidity, such as when an election director is quoted as saying, we saw no problems with this election. And the reporter doesn't ask, did you look for any? Or when the election director is quoted as saying, we're sure the election outcome was not affected. And the reporter doesn't ask, how would you possibly know since you haven't counted the ballots? We need to call up the newspaper, criticize them, and accuse them of publishing lies. The Help America Vote Act requires electronic voting. We're seeing that all over New York State. I'd like to make four suggestions for your reading pleasure. Liberal Opinion, it's a paper that comes out once a week with great articles, and you can get rhetoric and wonderful cartoons. You can get good ways of expressing yourself in a funny way on a serious subject. Also, Funny Times, it's a monthly. Funny Times. Also, there are two emails that I suggest that everyone get, and you try to get everybody else you know to get them, and that is the Daily Voting News from John Gideon of Voters Unite, and the Progress Report from Center for American Progress. I have three other subjects that I want to touch on briefly. One is the subject of community. Democracy is a form of community. It's a system of government where we care about the general welfare, meaning the opportunity for all people to live a decent life with equal opportunity to work and to live in peace and to have equal justice before the law. We need to acknowledge, as we work for democracy, that not all Americans have yet enjoyed the benefits of democracy, that poverty, race, religious affiliation, ethnic background, and physical disability are major determinants of how much democracy any given American individual enjoys. I want to mention something about conspiracy. No one has yet explained to my satisfaction the difference between a conspiracy and a long-range business plan. The people in power in our country have been working to get there for decades, and they did it the way you would learn in business school. They put their people in positions of authority. They did the work over the long term, and now they're in there. But it didn't happen overnight. It happened over a period of 20 years. In order for us to reestablish democracy, we need to join every relevant organization, volunteer, do the work, get elected to organizational positions of responsibility and authority, and lead those organizations step by step back to supporting democracy. My last subject is the idea of taking to the streets. It is necessary to have people yelling and screaming in the streets because otherwise people will not pay attention. But equally, for every person yelling and screaming in the streets, we need people on the inside, as insiders in positions of authority, to lead our institutions back to supporting democracy. When I hear people talk about so-called uninformed poll workers and Democrats who made a wrong decision, my question is, why aren't we working the polls and why aren't we running the Democratic Party or any other party or any other organization that's making wrong decisions? There's no one else who's going to do it for us. We have to get in there, and the first thing we have to do is to double our size. So if everybody could recruit one other person to work on this, that would be great. When people in New York State talk about modernizing, I notice that nobody's talking about bringing cameras into the election process. Everything you hear about elections, go to your bank and talk to your bank manager. I sit down with my bank manager and I tell him, this is what they're saying about elections. How do you handle the comparable thing in the bank? I asked him, what do you do when you open the cash deposit machine on Monday morning after businesses have made cash deposits all weekends? His answer, two clerks, two managers, and a camera. And not a camera over there, but a camera where they hold up the papers and the money and they do it all in front of the camera. There's no question in the bank about how much money they found in the box. William Penn, the proprietor of Pennsylvania in 1682, was asked by the people in Pennsylvania what form of government they should have. He wrote back and he said, the form of government doesn't matter, because if the people are good, the government will work. And if the people are bad, no form of government will save them from their own evil. I'd like to say the same thing about elections. The technology that we use is less important than our morals and our participation. You can make paper ballots work, and you can make them not work. You can make lever machines work and make them not work. We need to be in there to observe. In October, right before the election in November, our Board of Elections in New York City sent out 11,000 welcome packets welcoming people to vote on November 9th. But we have insiders working in the Board of Elections, and that immediately showed up in the press. And so the executive director of the Board of Elections said, well, it was a computer error. He was later asked at a hearing, what do you mean a computer error? Somebody typed on the 2 and it printed a 9? And he said, well, maybe they typed on the 9, you know. But because we had people on the inside, because we had people working for the Board of Elections who represented democratic interests, we knew about it, and they ended up sending out a second packet and a postcard to every individual who had gotten the first packet, you know, correcting the error. So there's no substitute for being on the inside as well as in the streets.
Good afternoon. My name is Larry Quick, and I live in Aurora, Illinois, otherwise known as Wayne's World, and I'm delighted to be here in Nashville. A couple of years ago, I had the privilege of being Dennis Hastert's Democratic Congressional Challenger in the 14th Illinois District, and that was really my baptism by fire into politics. And I first personally became aware that we had a problem with election system integrity in early 2003 when Tom Hartman had an article published on Common Dreams about the Chuck Hagel election, and it was something like, if you want to win the elections, just control the voting machines. And I've been escalating my level of involvement ever since then. Last June, a group of election system integrity activists happened to be attending the Take Back America conference in Washington. Maybe some of you folks were there. It was a fantastic event, a couple of thousand people. But somehow the word got out that there were a group of people there that were thinking about creating a national task force to create election integrity in this country. So over the course of the conference, we had about three or four organizing meetings. I think at one meeting we had like 35 people. And the idea was to consider creating task forces in each and every state with a central coordinating committee. And then within those task forces, there would be a research and action teams working on specific areas like legislative options and strategies, legal options and strategies, folks doing work on exit polling and providing information. And so what I would like to present to you guys for your consideration is the possibility of really creating an army across this country. Because in the army you have squads, and then you know, maybe it's 12 or 13 folks. These numbers aren't exactly right. And then a couple of squads are in a platoon, and then you have some platoons in a company. And as I look out across the room, you know, maybe we have a couple of companies, I don't know if we even have a brigade at this point across the country. We certainly don't have a division, and then the divisions are combined into an army. So what I would like people to think about is all of the election districts across the country. Now, I read somewhere that there are like 3,700 counties, something like that, lots of counties, and most of those counties choose the voting technology that they're going to use. This is certainly true in my state, in Illinois. In Illinois, there are 102 counties, 102 election districts, and they are right now in the process of deciding whether they're going to apply for this HAVA money. Now, as far as I can tell in Illinois, at this point, we have a fairly, fairly honest system. There are a couple of counties that might be suspect, but basically in Illinois, it seemed that the will of the people was generally expressed, but that's in peril at this point. I'm gonna be going back. I live in Kane County, which is about 40 miles west of downtown Chicago, and last week, the county clerk and the Kane County government was opening sealed bids from vendors of computerized voting systems. They're going to be having their monthly meeting this Tuesday morning. I've asked to be given some time to speak. But what's going around is that the county clerk, as I've heard it, is representing to the 25 board members saying, we've got to replace our voting equipment. You know, that my understanding is that, you know, that he's saying that the federal HAVA requires that we replace our punch card equipment, which is what we have in Kane County, and which under the current circumstances seems to be producing reliable election results. At least it was the case in the last election. So one of the things that we need to do is to get the word out at the county level that no, indeed, the federal HAVA does not mandate or require the replacement of our existing voting equipment unless the county applies for the money to do it. And if they apply for the money to do it, then they have to get it done by January the 1st. So I think our first priority is to say, no, we're not gonna buy any more of these dangerous computer systems. I mean, they're in lots of states all over the country, but they're not in all 3,700 counties, okay? So we still have strong pockets of democracy. We still have strong pockets of fairly reliable election systems. And what I'd like people to think about, suppose we could create a task force in each state, and those task forces would begin to create county chapters, so that in Illinois, and we're beginning to do this, we're starting a chapter, I have privileged to serve as chair of the Illinois Ballot Integrity Project, and we're starting chapters in Kane County, DuPage County, and Cook County, because in the end, no matter what kind of election system we have, I truly believe that we're going to need ongoing citizen oversight. And in a county, we might need 20, 30, 40 citizens to monitor and keep a close watch on whatever it is that's going on, whatever that election system is. So the Illinois Ballot Integrity Project has a website, and it has state discussion forums, so that if people are interested in starting the process of forming a state task force with the long-term goal of creating a chapter in each and every county, they can start communicating through the state discussion forums. And also, we have about 17 discussion forums for the research action teams. So the people, instead of everyone trying to reinvent the wheel, let's say on figuring out the best kind of legislation or, you know, legal options or providing information on the extent of paper ballots and hand counts around the world, that this information can be posted on these 17 specialized discussion forums. This is all up, it's ready to go. You go to ballotintegrity.org and you can begin posting. I would like to, make a couple of points in terms of what is it, if there were three things that we could come together in unity on, so that when we left here, we could say, well, yeah, we at least agree on all of these three things. And so I'd like to offer three really important elements of an honest election system. And the first is that we have nonpartisan, multipartisan, or at least bipartisan election boards at the federal, state, and county level. This is a huge problem. We can't design quality into our election system if we don't have bipartisan, nonpartisan election boards, federal, state, and county. So, nonpartisan boards. The second is that we need transparent and independent exit polling for all statewide elections and other key elections. Now, I was speaking with John Simon last June at the conference, and he said, at the state level, it's very cost efficient to devise a statewide exit polling system. 95% confidence level, you might have to sample 225 voters who voted. 99% confidence level, you might have to get in contact a couple of thousand. But certainly for president, U.S. senators, governors, secretaries of states, attorney generals, certainly for any statewide office, we need to have transparent and independent exit polling, an exit polling system that the data will be released afterwards, that the assumptions are going to be made available, that the people conducting them are professionals, they're competent, but it's a very bipartisan, multipartisan event. So we have nonpartisan election boards, transparent and independent exit polling. And finally, I'm going to make a case for hand counting, okay? Because in my gut, in my soul, when I'm looking at a black box, whether it's a lever machine or a DRE or an OptiScan machine or whatever it is, I cannot say that I know with certainty that there hasn't been some kind of miscounting, some kind of fraudulent programming. And the thing is that I think computers as an electronic pencil are a great idea. I mean, you know, so we can have a machine where you make your choices and then it prints out a paper ballot, which the voter then looks at, can make sure that all of the X's are in the right columns, that's placed in a ballot box. But then what happens when the polls close at 7 o'clock? Those ballots are hand counted. Now, Lynn Landis had some information out on her website that indicated, that was listing all the countries that were using paper ballots and hand counts around the world. And I think at the time, over 90% of the world's democracies rely on paper ballots and hand counts. We are the oddball democracy, okay? In Germany, one of the most technologically sophisticated nations in the world, do you want to know how they tabulate their votes? They use hand counting. In France, they use hand counting. In Canada, they use hand counting. In the polling districts in New Hampshire, they use hand counting. In hundreds of counties across the rest of the country, they use hand countings. And if you limit the polling place to about 500 voters, you can get it done in about 3 or 4 hours. Now, in Chicago, we have all of these approvals of judges and stuff put on the same ballot. No, if you have just the federal and state candidates on a single ballot for the general elections, and then you have the consolidated elections, you know, for mayor, city council and stuff, you're not gonna have more than 7 to 10 offices to count. And it can easily be done by counters in 3 or 4 hours. So if you wanna use machines, I understand the Swiss first hand count, and then they run them through the machines. That's no problem. If you want to use a computer to print out a clean ballot that's going to, you know, catch problems, that's fantastic, but you can't escape the hand counting. If we don't have hand counting, We are not going to have a secure democracy. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, my name is David Lytell. I'm a political organizer. I ran Redefeat Bush in the last election cycle. I ran Scientists and Engineers for Change, two different political committees. Prior to that, I was a co-founder of Democrats.com in the 2000 election cycle, an organization you never heard of called Democrats Online in the 96 election cycle. In the inter-electoral period, the period between Election Day and Inauguration Day, in cooperation with Dan Ashby, who's here as well, we did about nine large-scale public mobilization events in three different states. Most of them were in Lafayette Park in front of the White House. I was also the organizer of the January 6th demonstration outside the U.S. Capitol. And we did a rally for the Republics in the days leading up to the challenge of Ohio's electors in Boston at Faneuil Hall and in San Francisco at the Herbst Theater. My job, our job as political organizers, and those of us who see ourselves that way, is really not primarily to seek and do further empirical work. I for one, am quite convinced that we have enough data and we have enough evidence. We do not yet, however, have a movement. We have the beginnings of a movement. And what I was hoping to be able to do with my time today was actually have a conversation. I feel, after having sat here for 2 days, that we're doing the only thing that we're able to do when we sit in the pews is applaud. And I want to actually ask some questions that are not rhetorical questions, that are actually legitimate questions. And just ignore the cameras, ignore the fact we don't have microphones, and let's see if we can't, a group this size and a group that is this cohesive, we ought to be able to have a conversation.
Actually, do you have a handheld mic? And if it would help, we can bring people up to the front.
Great.
If it works.
In the film Jaws, Roy Scheider, the Roy Scheider character, you'll remember if you remember back to the film Jaws, there's a point at which he sees the shark. He actually sees the shark off the back of the boat. Does anybody remember what he does when he sees the shark? That's exactly right. He goes to the captain and he says, "We're going to need a bigger boat." Now, I would suggest that all of you here share at least that insight. We have all seen the shark, and we all understand that we're going to need a bigger boat. What we have at this point, what I would call a proto-movement, where we have a lot of groupuscules, we have a lot of individual organizations, and in part, that is our curse. It is our blessing and it is our curse. It takes almost nothing, as we all know, to set ourselves up on the internet and present ourselves as an organization. It's not enough. And although it's wonderful that we are able to do that more easily than we have in the past, that's not, unfortunately, we need to be able to figure out as organizers how to come up with things that we can all work on together that bring us together and that actually make further progress. So I have three that I wanted to put on the table that I think would work. And again, what you have to do is just think of yourselves as being in general in the election reform community, in the honest elections community, not as a representative of a particular organization. But look, we have a whole lot more in common, those of us who are in this room, than we do with the people who are not in this room. And we need to figure out some common purpose, or we're not going to be able to reach the people who won't come out for an event like this. The three that I have that I think are most important that I would like to work on and ask for your concurrence and ask for some feedback are really three things. One is, we need to have, if we want to be a movement, we need to have books that are being written this year, that are being published at the end of this year, and we need to be out on tour in the spring of next year on college campuses and in other places. Now, I've kind of caught word, you know, there's some word circulating. There are some people that are working on book-like manuscripts. I can tell you from my interaction with the some of the progressive publishers that there are a number of publishers that believe that there will be a little boomlet, at the very least, of books in the that are concerned with election reform issues that will start coming out towards the end of this year. But I want to know, how many of you will help be a part of a network that will take the authors of these books, organize events for them in your local community, and move them along their way? If we can set ourselves up as a network, that's an honest question, that's a legitimate question. Imagine there are four or five different books that will be written this summer and published this fall. Can we, as a community, figure out a way to organize ourselves and to be able to take these book authors, organize events for them at local bookstores, at local universities, and other places? That, I think, gives us you don't need to agree with everything the author says, forget about that. It's just a question of can we begin to put a community of people together? And people who create DVDs, right. The other thing is, and I think this is great, and I thank you for shouting that out. The problem with alternative media is not making it. Look at all the video cameras that are here. Lots of people will make alternative media, and in fact, they do all the time. What we could do that would be monumental is to have a list that was large enough for people to be able to sell it, to be able to distribute it. If we somehow could sell 50,000 copies of a DVD on election reform issues, we'd be the largest distributor on the left. That's it. We would be the place that people would come to try to distribute their wares. A couple of other ideas, and then I'll stop talking and let you guys start talking. The second is candidate work. You know, I have great respect for people who look at this in a nonpartisan frame of reference, and I think there's it's entirely possible that there is going to be a spontaneous citizen-led movement that will be outside of any of the major parties that will rise up and in patriotic disgust and run the bad guys out. But in lieu of that, what we are left with is the alternative possibility that the reason that we are not able to talk about election reform issues in the Congress in the way we would like to, or certainly in the news media, is because it is the single hottest, most important partisan issue. And although I have, again, I don't mean any disrespect towards Common Cause, there's a saying in Washington that says sometimes you win them over and sometimes you just win. And I'd love to win them over. But in lieu of winning them over, then what we're faced with is simply a question of, can we find the people who support us politically, and can we make them stronger? Can we make them better? So my question, and this is a very serious question, if I am in Washington and I'm trying to make someone like Stephanie Tubbs Jones or Rush Holt or Barbara Boxer a more potent national figure, can I count on you to put together a group of 25 to 50 people in your community so that we can dispatch a politician there and have them speak in front of a large crowd and invite the news media? That's what we need to be able to do. How many of you will say, yes, I will advance a trip for a national politician so they can come to my community and I will listen to what it is they have to say? If we use our network in that way, we can be substantially more politically potent than we are. And then just let me say one other, and then I'll stop talking and ask questions. The thing that we haven't used successfully enough yet that I think historically, if you look at it, that is ours to reach down and pick up is the initiative and referendum. There's a page that I'd like to point out to you, but I can't show you right now, unfortunately. iandrinstitute.org, initiativeandreferenduminstitute.org. If you look at the map on that page, you will see all of the states in which you can do a citizen petition movement to put a matter on the ballot. Now, I've got my candidates for what those should be. I'm sure you have yours as well. To me, the leading candidate is nonpartisan election administration. It seems to me that that's the sort of an initiative that not only unifies us, but gets a whole bunch of other people on our side as well, including, for that matter, Republicans that otherwise might not be on our side, depending on how we craft it. It could be an initiative on paper ballots. It could be an initiative on public oversight of all the management of the election. It could be an initiative on hand counting. It could be an initiative on independent exit polls. You know, I don't really care. It has to be an initiative on one of those things, and you have to be able to go, I mean, look up how many votes it takes, how many signatures it takes to get something like that on the ballot. If we are to emulate the populist movement, and not the kind of the retro populist movement of today, but the original populist movement of the turn of the century, the last century, they've given us a tool. Reach back a century. They gave us something we can use. So to take an example, in Nebraska, in North Dakota, in Ohio, let's take Ohio as an example. It takes 100,000 signatures to get something on the ballot. In Ohio, it takes I think for a constitutional amendment, it would take about 300,000 signatures. That is a doable thing. That is an amount of signatures that we can gather. So let me stop talking and say just one last thing. To the degree that I have hope, first of all, I'm so pleased, Bernie, to be here at all. I'm pleased to see how many people are here and how many people kind of have the same feeling of being out of sync with their times, as I do. But one of the things that's happening in Washington that I can report to you is very hopeful, is that there are now four of these self-organized donor networks, people who put a great deal of money into the 2004 election through a number of different organizations. And I think one of the things that I can say that's good is they are dissatisfied. They don't feel that they got what they paid for. That's a good thing, in much the same way that the tech boom of the 90s would not have been possible without the venture capital industry. I think the progressive political boom of the coming years will be rendered possible by these organizations. One's called the Democracy Alliance. There are a couple of others as well. They are not yet in the business of evaluating proposals and investing money in progressive political organizations, but that will be true by the end of this year. Folks, I think we ought to flood the zone. You know, I think if there are people out there that are willing to consider putting money into progressive political organizing, what I would hope they would see when they look at us is an alternative on the left to some of the issues on the right that galvanize people. I've heard as much as I need to hear about abortion issues. I've heard as much as I need to hear about gay marriage. I don't know what other issues galvanize the progressive community any more than honest elections. If there is another one, I'll follow that one, but I don't know what it is. From my perspective, what we have here is the beginning of, the nucleus of, the organizing that is necessary in order to be politically effective. So let me stop talking and ask you a very open-ended question. How do we turn this into a successful political movement?